Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you. Hello, welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name is Tom Marvin, Senior Technical Editor at BikeRadar.com and at MBUK magazine as well. Joining me in the podcast studio today is Ashley Quinnan. He is our Senior Technical Editor for all things road on BikeRadar.com. How are you getting on, Ash?
I'm very well, thanks, Tom. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. What have you been doing recently? As we all start a podcast with asking what we've been up to recently. So here we are. What have we been doing?
Well, at time of recording, last weekend or the weekend before, I did the Marmont Gran Fondo Alpe Sportive.
Oh, right, I've heard of that. Alps. That's
yeah,
a big one.
That's what, yeah, many people have. Yeah, I can safely say I won't be doing it next year, but I might do it the year after. I think I need a bit more training next time.
Right, okay. Why were you doing it? Was it for fun or was it for work?
It was for fun, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, work didn't cut. Yeah, I know, mad. But no, it didn't touch work at all. So it was a nice drive down Dover Cali ferry, drive all the way down to the Alps. Nice little road trip with a friend of mine. Great.
Nice. I'm a big fan of the Brittany Ferries Portsmouth to Caen or Le Havre or Saint-Malo ferry and return. Because it says if you're not au fait with the drive from Bristol to Folkestone,
yep,
it's horrible.
It's not easy, is it?
Really. It's like probably my least favourite drive in the UK. And I don't say that as a big driver, but it's a horrible drive. And then you get the lovely overnight ferry, and you land there fresh in France first thing in the morning, go down to a little boulangerie, get yourself a croissant. It's delicious. I love it.
You do love a croissant.
Oh, I do love a croissant. I really do. Anyway, that's really irrelevant for a cycling podcast, but I thoroughly recommend Brittany Ferries.
There you are. Plug done.
Not even sponsored.
Not even sponsored, exactly.
Do you know what? If I could draw up a list of sponsors I would love to have, one of them would be Brittany Ferries.
In the interest of balance, we went with P&O, and across from the way, you can see DFDS as well. So
Wow, there you are. All you need is an Irish ferry to fill it all out and then get the train underneath the sea.
There you go.
I'm doing the Channel Tunnel in about 5-6 weeks' time on my annual pilgrimage to the Alps. Me and a few pals are heading out there, but this is why I need sponsorship from Brittany Ferries, because it's quite expensive.
Which resort are you going to?
We're going out to Les Arcs Plany, my friend, a company called Bike Village.
Yep.
Do mountain bike guiding out there. Excellent holidays. This will be my 22nd year in a row. I have not missed a year since I was 16.
Wow, okay. Yeah. How are your French skills?
I'm en français, c'est pas mal.
Oh, bien sûr.
I used to live in France.
Yes.
Yeah, I love, yeah, anyway, this is completely irrelevant to the podcast. I absolutely love France.
Yeah, you do. You do. It's not a day goes by when you're in the office, you don't mention something about France.
It's just great. I just love it.
Shall we get on with it?
Yeah. Yeah, we should. Speaking of France, well, this is actually tied in really nicely, because today you've had the pleasure, I think, of testing some bikes. We are in the middle of the Tour de France. You'll notice on the Bike Radar podcast that we are Tour de France heavy at the moment. That's because it is the largest cycle race in the world. Everyone, roadies and mountain bikers, love it. But to tie in with that, with Cycling Plus, you tested three really key Tour de France race bikes, super high-end, probably got a house deposit in your garage type sort of bike tests. And you also tested a fourth as well, which maybe didn't quite fit in the test quite so perfectly.
Yeah.
But you did test four super Gucci bikes.
Indeed.
And we're here to talk about them.
Yes. So essentially, yeah, around the Tour de France time, why wouldn't you do it? We knew there were three bikes, but there were four in the end that sort of came to our attention that we hadn't tested before. They were either brand new and they were interesting. And we thought, you know what? It's a good opportunity to sort of run the rule over some of the bikes we've not seen at the sort of the pro spec level.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some reflections on that I'll go into a little bit later on. But essentially, yeah, it was about just finding the parameters of the test are basically find the bike that feels the fastest from point A to point B.
Okay.
It's very difficult to do A-B testing on this because, you know, conditions change, you know, moment by moment, let alone ride by ride. So I did a couple of segment times along the way to, you know, on Strava just to see at the same kind of pedaling efforts. I'm using my Garmin Vector Power meter pedals to mediate my effort.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as with every ride and each day, you know, conditions are slightly different. So it just gave a good indication as to, you know, how fast these bikes sort of went on flat sections, along up climbs, a little bit descending as well, but it's a bit more subjective because, you know, it's all about handling and about the confidence it gives you as a rider, which of course, if you've got different preferences, you may find one bike a preference over another. But yeah, So that was basically the test. Find the fastest bike or the fastest feeling bike. The
fastest feeling bike. I guess yes. If we don't have wind tunnels.
We don't have a wind tunnel, no. You know. Blowing a fan, my sort of indoor training fan at the bikes doesn't really cut it. So no wind tunnel.
Yeah. Okay. In many ways, you know, bike tests, you know, when you go and buy a bike as a normal person who isn't, you know, A, sponsored and B,
rich.
You know, rich.
Yeah.
Or, well, no, not even that. I mean more like if you're not in a team and you're not equipped with a wind tunnel, actually most bike purchases are to some extent emotional things.
Yes.
Especially when we're talking at this like super high end, you're going to buy the bike that you like the look of, you're going to buy the bike that gives you sort of the feels inside. And actually in some ways that is something we can talk about and test, as long as well as obviously like the ride qualities, the comfort and how fast it kind of feels, because like I said, there's a bit of emotivity going on here.
Yes.
Should we talk about the bikes that you had then?
Because yes,
I'm just looking at this list and the old adage of you could buy a car for that definitely stands true. So BMC Team Machine R01 Limited, a snip at 14,999, and that's across the currencies as well.
Yeah, indeed.
That's not cheap.
It's not cheap. No. So this bike is ridden by, at the moment, it's ridden by Tudor Pro Cycling. They actually race on the Conti Tour, the second tier of
Pro
professional cycling. Yeah, Pro Conti. But it used to be ridden by Agir d'Azur Citroën, which is now known as Decathlon Agir d'Azur La Mondiale, and they now ride a Van Rysel bike this year because of the Decathlon partnership. But essentially, yeah, it's ridden by the Tudor Pro Cycling team, which if anyone knows anything about a little bit of road cycling, it's a team that's sort of backed and led by Fabian Cancellara, a Swiss team, Swiss registered team. And this bike came with the full SRAM Red ETAP Axis group set with DT Swiss ARC 1100 die cut wheels, basically the creme de la creme of what you can get in sort of the...
You bloody hope so at 15 grand.
What's that? What'd I do?
You'd hope so at 15 grand.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you came here and said, oh, well, second
well,
tier.
Second tiers.
I'd be like, ugh.
You'd be surprised on occasion. Like sometimes you do spot bits of, you know, bits of kit and you go, wait, I wouldn't have spec'd that on this bike at this price. Surely not. But yeah, the creme de la creme, as you would expect, including a quark, dual-sided power meter, the works. The only thing to note about this bike was actually it had the old SRAM Red Axis group set on it.
Me.
But that's just because we couldn't source one around the launch.
Yeah, because that is a fresh group set as well.
Completely fresh group set. I mean, you know, Tudor Pro Cycling are now running with that group set. At the time I got the bike for testing, they were using the old one still. Yeah. Some pro teams have started using the new one on their respective bikes, you know, Movistar with Canyon, etc. You know, there were others out there. But, you know, it was a full pro spec bike. And actually, to be honest with you, the old ETAP Axis group set was, you know, just as...
Oh, I'm sure.
It's up there with Durace anyway. It's a matter of preference whether you prefer one or the other, to be honest. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a posh one to start off with.
Yes.
Moving on, we had the Cannondale Super 6 Evo Lab 71 team. Now, I know a little bit about Lab 71. It is the super high-end exclusive ones.
Yes.
Which, in this case, you need £12,500 in order to buy, or €14,499 or $14,000.
Indeed, you do. Some of the EU prices, should note, are slightly different compared to that. Not that it makes a difference at this high price point, but if you're in Germany or Italy, they're slightly different just because of the way Cannondale's priced them. But with that noted, effectively this bike, the team bike, is effectively the EF Education EasyPos team bike. So it has the mad pink, yellow and white colorway on it. Great. Looks great. It made the cover shot of the Cycling Plus magazine that the test went into. And yeah, just looks, you know, really stands out for the crowd. Whether or not I'd buy it because of just how mad it is another thing entirely. But it's purely personal. Like of the three bikes that sort of made the test, this is the one that stands out hands down.
Okay.
Full team spec with an FSA K-Force carbon crankset that's been swapped in for the Durace one. So it's a Durace Di2 spec build with the power box power meter. Yeah, and Vision Metron wheels, just everything you could possibly want. Ceramic bearings wherever you look, basically, on this one.
Great. Just tape to the top tube.
Yep.
Next up was the Envy Melee.
The Envy Melee, yes.
Yeah, a snip at £11,965 or $15,500 or €14,000. Obviously, again, subject to local pricing and all that sort of stuff. But Envy, interesting stuff. Obviously, they've been making wheels for quite a long time, and it's only in the past couple of years that they've been building their own frames.
That's right.
Pretty cool. Like, I'm into it.
Yeah, it's a night. I think they have that kind of air of exclusivity about them. Not everyone buys them. I think the branding does them a lot of favors. I've forgotten what you've called it now, where something looks the same a logo looks the same whether you look at it in one side of a in the mirror image is the same as it would be. Yeah.
Palindrome?
A palette? No, that's no, no. Let's not dwell
Let's
on it.
Let's try not to. Let's not dwell on clever words.
Yeah. Someone in the comment section can tell us what it is, and I'll remember as soon as we finish recording.
I'm gonna look at what a palindrome
is. Exactly. There you go. But yeah, so this it's a very cool bike. They do a custom road bike. They do this Melee sort of off the peg frame set, which you buy with certain NV components attached to it. And then you can add the rest on, you know, with the distributor in your territory. Yeah. And yeah, they've also do like a gravel bike as well. They've released the Mog, which is a highly rated gravel bike. And there's another bike as well that's been launched recently, and I've totally forgotten what it's called. The Frey. The Frey. Quite how I don't know whether they all sound like fights, Melee. Frey.
They do
right. But Mog.
Mog.
Mog. I'm not entirely sure how that fits in.
No,
but we can leave that there as well.
Yeah. By the way, palindrome is one of those words like kayak. KAYIK. Yes.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know how it applies to images, but anyway.
It'll come to me later. It'll come to me later. Yeah, Illuminati. The Illuminati. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Again.
So anyway, the Melee at the moment is ridden by Team Total Energies. As we record this, actually, just yesterday, Anthony Turgis won on stage 9. It was a great winner. Yeah, I particularly enjoyed, you remarked earlier, particularly enjoyed how he lifted his bike over his head. Got bored of doing that and then just chucked it on the floor. You heard it crash on like the ITV highlights. I couldn't believe it. But yeah, again, this is a full Dura-Ace Di2 spec with NVSES 4.5 wheels, which is usually the wheel set of choice for both the Total Energies team as well as Tadej Pogačar, although he rides obviously a Colnago frame set. There's no power meter on this particular build. It's worth noting. It, as I said, it is a little bit cheaper than the others, relatively speaking. But the thing about the NV, the way you buy a Melee is essentially you buy the frame with the, and then you choose your handlebar and stem setup from NV's sort of offerings. There's a wide range there, so it's quite hard not to find what you need. And a seat post with either a zero setback or a layback as well. Their own saddle if you want as well, and then you can have the wheels obviously that they supply.
Get some
and
reserve
tires.
Ones or creamer or something like that. Well, for it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whatever you want. I mean, like, why you would want to on an NV bike, I'm not quite sure. Like, it would be a little bit odd looking, but yeah. But essentially, you can spec it how you like within reason, and obviously with deep pockets, of course. But yeah, it's also worth noting as well on the price. Obviously, we've listed $15,000 as like a comparison price, but NV products tend to price a lot cheaper in the US anyway. So if you are in the US and you're buying this bike, it actually comes closer to something like what we would consider about £10,000 in the UK for this particular build. Chuck a power meter on top, that's another £500, you know, for a particular crank set that you would spec, because it's an essential piece of kit for a racer. You're still markedly cheaper than the other two bikes.
I mean, one might almost call it good value.
I'm not going to do that. You can do that if you like. I'm not going to do that. But relatively speaking...
Let us know what you think in the comments.
Yeah. Let us know. Yeah. And I can tell what you do think. But yes, you know, it's another reflection around sort of, you know, all of these bikes have top spec group sets. And it's quite common for us to say in podcasts and in our reviews that actually the better bang for buck is elsewhere, maybe a little bit lower down this sort of the pecking order in terms of performance. That's probably true. Now it's another one of my reflections here, but we can cover that a little bit later on.
Okay.
And the extra bike.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. It was the Villiers Verticale SLR extra bike. I'm kidding. The Villiers Verticale SLR. So it's a climbing orientated bike. So Astana, they can ride an FDJ as well. Yep. He said he had a Di2 build with Mike Kleos RD 36 wheels. £11,000, $14,500, €12,200.
Yes. And this bike, we had it at around about the same sort of time. It hadn't launched when I was testing it. So we were waiting for, we needed to know when the embargo lifted to see if it could make the test. In the end, we made the decision not to include it on the basis that it's different from the others. So all the others are all round race bikes with an aero leaning, the BMC more so. And then you've got the Melee and the Super 6, which, if anyone remembers our 2023 Bike of the Year test.
I read it on a daily.
Good. If you remember that, we had those two bikes and they came the top two positions with sort of cheaper builds, with, you know, sort of Ultegra Di2 builds. back then, but they were all they're considered all round race bikes. Some aero attention, but you know, not ignoring the fact that they need to be lightweight and you know, easy to handle and able to climb, and with positions that riding positions that aren't necessarily too aggressive for the majority of people. The Verticale is a lot like that, but it's a bit more climbing oriented. So it didn't make our final test, although you can read about it on bikeradar.com, scored very well, and is an excellent climbing bike with really predictable handling for descending. But when you're riding on the flat, of course, it's not designed for that. From Villiers Stable, you know, Cavendish rides a Falante SLR, for example. And the reason for that is because it's just more aerodynamic. It would be that bike, although a few years old now, would be a better match for the other three.
Cool.
So in order not to unfairly criticise the Verticale SLR, we didn't include it in the test. However, it got its own standalone review.
Okay. Well, we won't unfairly criticise it in this podcast either. So we'll stop talking about the Villiers.
Yes.
And we are going to focus now on those top three bikes. Now, you've written them in score order from the winner down to the third, but I'm going to flip it round.
Go for it.
Because, you know, we all like a little bit of jeopardy in there.
Hit me.
In third position.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, this is all like, we're talking about very expensive bikes.
Yes.
None of them aren't very good. And in fact, you gave the NV Melee a solid 4-star review, but I think it's the one that you'd pick yourself.
It is, yeah. It's a reflection also of how it tested and how it reviewed when I did the performance category for Bike of the Year last year, in that it has a really well-rounded blend of you know, accessible ride position, easy handling, something you can get used to easy, and something you can ride fast easily. The downside to that, I'll also add, it's very comfortable to ride as well. The downside to that is it doesn't feel as sort of raw and unadulterated in its performance. So you hop on a bike, you hop on this bike, for example, and once you've set it up accordingly, the best way I can describe it is when you then go and ride it, it fits very well. It handles very, very easy to begin with, and it continues to handle that way. But once you start hitting the higher sort of speeds and want to accelerate quickly, the other two bikes felt just that little bit sharper.
Okay.
And a little bit of that, I think, comes down to the handling, just feeling a little bit tauter. I can use all these, you know, words to describe it, but essentially, like, your steering inputs just require just a little bit less effort. And if you're a highly tuned racer or someone who just rides bikes all the time and wants to go as fast as you possibly can, then that kind of thing is a positive. It's just slightly more of a positive than it would be to be slightly more relaxed. Of course, all of that comes with the caveat that it's horses for courses. And if I had to swing my leg over any one of these three bikes, which I did have to, by the way, poor me, it would be the Melee. And that's simply because it suits me and fits me the best of all three. But that's a personal reflection. And if anyone reads any of our reviews on bikeradar.com, we do try to step away from those personal reflections. Yes, they're valid. Yes, we want to share them with you. But you know, if person A or person B is listening to me now and you're thinking, well, that can't be the best race bike because it didn't score as highly. Well, it could be the best bike for you. And you've really got to throw into the mix that it, although not cheap, it is cheaper than the others and you can spec it the way you want to.
Stunning value for money, I thought. Absolutely stunning value for money.
I don't know whether anyone can tell. You know, Tom doesn't really change his intonation all that much, but that was sarcasm, everyone. But yeah, absolutely. No one's saying that this is a great value bike versus what you could otherwise get. Don't get me wrong. If someone came to me and said, I really want a Melee, Ash, what would you spec it with? I'd point them towards an Ultegra Di2 model. Save your money, you know, a little bit more money. And as much as that's still a very expensive bike, you're going to get as much performance, possibly even go for the foundation wheels we tested before if you want to stay within the NV family. But yes, so it scores very well. It's one of the best bikes we've ever tested alongside its sort of sibling lower spec bike, but that one bike of the year performance category. But in this case, it's just not quite as sharp feeling as the other two.
Okay. Well, in the middle of it all, the Cannondale Super 6, a close second.
A very close second. I started referring to this privately, and now it's not going to be public, but I started referring to this as the Super 6 hen's tooth, because it was very difficult to get hold of a Lab 71 Super 6. I'm even told that until relatively recently, not just at the start of the Tour de France, but until relatively recently, not all of the EF Education riders rode a Lab 71 bike. Some of them rode high mod bikes that were painted up as Lab 71 bikes. Now, my reflection of it is that we had a high mod when we did our 2023 bike of the year test, and actually I can't feel the difference between the two.
Of course not.
You know, you're talking about the high mod carbon construction versus the Series Zero carbon construction. That's what they call it, at least, Cannondale. But it's slightly lighter, but in terms of the ride quality, the handling, the responsiveness, the, you know, obviously the tube shape's all exactly the same. You can't really tell the difference. And if you subscribe to, you know, saving a couple of hundred grams, is, you know, like taking a banana out of your back pocket. And I know Warren likes to say, you just take that out and job done, like you've saved the way. It remains true here. So that being said, it feels every bit as racy as the winning bike. It's really sharp. It's got a natural ride position that just feels a little bit more relaxed than the obviously what we can now just, you know, declare as the BMC being the winner, because that's very focused.
It's the Villiers.
Yeah, funny that. But you know, it's quite tall at the front as well, and that's actually going to be really good for a lot of riders who maybe can't get into that aero tuck position quite as easily, who need that extra stack at the front in order just to not put their lower back or, you know, their hips through so much stress. So I think it could easily be that the Super 6 is the best bike for most people listening to this podcast now, and possibly the most desirable, especially with that paint job. And
it's very cool.
It is very cool. And, you know, with you know, there's almost no stone left unturned in the spec as far as I can remember. I mean, yeah, the wheels are contemporary. They're not pushing the boundaries of sort of wheel set design. But there's nothing holding them back. You couldn't say that they felt any slower than any other wheel set. So, it's probably a good thing for most people that it's quite tall at the front. But again, how many racers do you see on the world tour or otherwise who go, yeah, do you know what? I want loads of stack on my bike and I want to ride a bike that's too big for me or is very tall at the front with a load of spacers. You just don't see it. Now, whether or not that's just due to a habit around races and you know, maybe they would be better off having a little extra stack just so that they can ride a bit more comfortable and get more power out, you know, that's open to debate. But I reckon that this Super 6 is a really good kind of like halfway house for many people. Give you all that like sharp, racy performance, but just not too aggressive.
A slightly more approachable package.
Exactly.
So that does mean that the BMC Team Machine R01 Limited was your winner. And it says, buy a whisker.
Buy a whisker, indeed.
Which, in the world of marginal gains, a whisker, you know, a win by a whisker is still a win.
I'm sure BMC sees it that way.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about this is it is notably, when you get on it, it's notably the most aggressive and most aero-oriented bike. The handlebars are, for example, 36 millimeters. That's very narrow.
That's very narrow.
36 centimeters wide center to center. And that's the only width you can have. But which is interesting because you'd think, well, that's bad for fit. But, you know, if you go narrower, you reduce your frontal area, which means you will cut, you know, in theory, a smaller gap through the air, and therefore you smaller hole through the air. Therefore, you'll go through it faster. It's also been, while, you know, it has been developed with Red Bull Technologies, which is an offshoot of the Formula One team. As I point out in my review, there's absolutely no evidence at all that Adrian Newey or any famous designer from the F1 team has had anything to do with this bike or even knows it exists, right? There's no evidence to suggest that at all. However, it does show that a lot of thought has gone into the aerodynamics. It's the one bike of the three, I would suggest, that I felt what you might describe as the sailing effect a little bit more, which is essentially where the aerodynamics have been tuned to reduce the turbulence behind you and to create basically, I think it's higher pressure behind you, which actually effectively pushes you forward. Now that happens through a number of tube shapes and a number of reasons, things working together. But like the really wide shaped fork, for example, looks very purposeful. It looks odd. When you first see it, you think, no, there's no way that you can have that can be aero, but it seems to work. And it gives you that sensation of sort of cutting through the air really quickly. And when it comes to going from point A to point B, unless you happen to be doing something like the Marmot I did a weekend or so ago, you know, it's going to be the fastest one over that course, in my opinion.
Nice. Okay. Well, so those are the three bikes, all of them lovely, lovely machines. And now, having done this test, you know, one of the nice things about being able to test a load of different bikes, you know, of a similar type is that you're able to sort of have a little reflect on that and sort of think a little bit more broad about, you know, what the deal is when you're looking at these bikes. What do you learn from them? And you've got your top three reflections.
Yeah. So my first reflection, and it's not something I needed to do this test to sort of work out for myself, really, having tested other race bikes before, other endurance bikes before, and so on. But race bikes are certainly a qualified purchase. You need to know that you can handle the geometry and the ride fit before you spend this kind of money on a bike.
Right. It's like buying like a high-powered rear-wheel drive car when you've just passed your test. You're probably going to end up in a ditch.
Possibly, yeah. Or if you live, I don't know, if you live somewhere that's in the winter, it snows quite a lot, might want to rethink the, might want to rethink having the power going to the rear wheels while all the weight's at the front with the engine or whatever. You know, you might want to rethink, you know, it's horses for courses. You buy the tool that works for you the best. And for many people, like, you know, especially with the BMC, because it pushes it more to an extreme, a little bit like the Ridley Falcon RS I tested last year, where that's very low down, very businesslike at the front end. A friend of mine who hopped on it just to have a quick go said, yeah, that's a bit like a point and shoot race. You just literally point it in a direction and it just goes quickly when you pedal, obviously. And there's no motor in it, I promise. But the way he described that actually sort of resonated with me, because I thought, well, yes, but do you want to sit on that bike for 80, 100, 120, 140 kilometers? Probably not. If you can handle it, great. If you can't handle it, you've got to be honest with yourself. So yeah, race bikes in general, like these ones, need to be treated with sort of respect when you think, I really want a race bike. Great. Okay. Qualify that by finding out from maybe a bike fitter or from your own experience what kind of stack you're going to need, or whether or not sharper handling is actually something you enjoy versus having more relaxed handling, and there's the whole balance equation that comes into play as well. So if you can test ride, even better, which is not a given, of course. So yeah, I think sometimes we all need to treat race bikes as a qualified purchase, and it may suit some people, it may be great, but as I said earlier, the most relaxed feeling of the three was the best fit for me and would be the one that I would naturally gravitate to if I were purchasing with my own money. That being said, I don't think I'm going from A to B quite as quickly on that over a short or medium course.
Okay. What was your learning number two?
Top spec components are not noticeably faster.
Okay.
It's the two bikes that made me sort of realize this or reaffirmed this for me were the Cannondale and the Envy. So both came with Durace group sets this time and the best wheels you can get from the respective brands that were supplying them. And I couldn't, it's not night and day between having, say six and a half grand Altegra DI2 bike with, say, second tier wheels relative to the competition than having these top spec components. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not delivering meaningful performance gain for the money that you're spending on it.
At non-tour pro level.
Yes. Yes. I mean, obviously at the pro level, you're looking for every small advantage and that can make a big difference. I get that. But these guys, the pro riders and sponsor team, they're not buying these bikes.
No.
And that's the fundamental truth. Whereas our listeners, I hope, or, talking to you guys
pretty,
now.
I think we're pretty influential in the pro scene, I think there's probably a
guard.
He chills out listening to the Bike Radar podcast.
And now he's thinking, oh, I should get a Force Axis group set rather than a Red Axis one.
If Ash says I don't need the top one, I don't need the top one.
Yeah, listen to him. But no, to anyone who's actually really spending their, really spending their hard-earned cash on a bike but wants it to be top spec, or at least feel like a top spec bike, you will get the same performance from a Force Axis or Altegra DI2 bike, spec bike, versus a Durace or Red Axis bike. Yes, there are differences to be had in, small details such as tires are important. Wheels can, I think, make a bigger difference if you were to upgrade your wheels to the top spec wheel area personally versus a drivetrain. But it's margins. It's really margins. And, it's quite easy to convince yourself there's more there than there actually is.
Okay. And I think this ties into your third reflection.
Yeah, so top spec carbon doesn't change a whole lot. And it's the Super 6 that sort of highlighted this for me. The Lab 71, you know, Super 6 is a brilliant bike. And it's an expression of the best of what Cannondale can do right now. Best power to weight ratio and all the marketing you want to throw at that. In reality, if you hop on a high mod bike, I can't tell the difference. I couldn't tell the difference. There's nothing in my mind that makes me go, yeah, do you know what? This feels that little bit stiffer and that little bit sharper. I just think it's lighter and it feels just as stiff and just as sharp. And again, if you take a banana out of your pocket, or you're not carrying around an extra multi-tool that you don't need to carry, or you don't. Ultimately, yes, it'll be slightly lighter and therefore maybe very, very slightly quicker, but it's margins again.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you can't really tell the difference there. The Melee had the same frame set as the one we tested maybe 18 months ago, just with a higher spec groups, you know, high spec components on it. So that was kind of a like for like test. And the BMC only comes in one flavor in itself. So yeah, it was the Super 6 that kind of highlighted this for me. But I've seen this before with, say, the Canyon Ultimate, where I've tested an Ultimate CFR. I've also tested an Ultimate CF SLX, the second tier. And Simon, my colleague, has also tested an SL version, the cheaper version of the three that they offer. And you're not losing out. We're both agreed on this. You're not losing out anything like what you might think you're losing out on because the pros are riding the CFR level frame set. And in fact, in the case of the Ultimate, I actually think the SLX frame is a slightly more well-rounded, bit more compliance in that setup and so on. So, you know, it's... to put it this way, if someone were to rock up at a cafe, someone riding a Lab 71 Super 6 and a High Mod Super 6, and one had Durace on and the other one had Ultegra Di2 on, I'd know which person in my heart of hearts has made the smarter purchase decision. That being said, the person who has, you know, who's decided that they want to spend their money on a Lab 71 with Durace, I fully respect that.
More power to that.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, if that's what you want to ride and you feel special when you're riding that, there's a lot to be said for that as well. So there's the objective argument. And as you said, there's the emotional argument at the start of the show.
There we go. What a nice way to round out that, Ash.
Oh, thanks very much.
Well, thanks ever so much, Ash, for your expertise and input. Of course, if you head to bikegrader.com, you can find reviews of those bikes. But first, you should head to your local newsagents and buy Cycling Plus issue 422, or is it 421?
It's 422, the one that's just gone out.
It's the one that is on sale now anyway.
It's on sale right now. You've got yours truly on the cover.
Well, oh.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes it, that's my first. It makes it a collector's item. No, no, but yeah, it's on Cycling Plus at the moment. We'll soon see longer, you know, there's more space online. You know, there's
infinite space on the internet,
infinite scrolling space. So some longer reviews will come on Bike Radar in due course. But yeah, if you want to see how they stack up against one another as opposed to standalone reviews,
you got to buy the mag.
Got to buy the mag.
Excellent stuff. Lovely stuff. Well, again, thanks again, Ash, for that. It was really interesting. Of course, if you've got any comments, questions, or suggestions for the Bike Radar podcast, if you want to tell Ash that he doesn't know what he's talking about, and in fact, actually buying the Lab 71 will give you infinitely more performance, then you can, of course, email us podcast@bikeradar.com.
Thank you for not giving my personal email address with that.
Now, if you haven't subscribed to the Bike Radar podcast, of course, hit the subscribe button and share it with your mates as well, because more listeners is always good. And you can email us podcast@bikeradar.com if you've got questions for an upcoming tech Q&A as well.
We'd love to hear them.
Absolutely. And we'll do our best to answer them accurately. Well, that's it. Thank you ever so much for listening. We'll be back again in a few more days' time with another podcast from Bike Radar. Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.